The other stayed above a while, feeling the slight surge and rumble through the soles of their feet and watching darkness pass. The sea of grass was visible only as the place where stars ended and flat blackness began. Cassad used a hand beam to illuminate glimpses of canvas and rigging, lines being pulled tight by invisible hands, and then he checked all the corners and shadowed places from stern to bow. The others watched in silence. When he clicked the light off, the darkness seemed less oppressive, the starlight brighter. A rich, fertile smell, more of a farm in springtime than of the sea, came to them on a breeze which had swept across 1,000 kilometers of grass. Sometime later, the consul called to them and they went below to eat. The galley was cramped and there was no mess table, so they used the large cabin in the stern as their common room, pushing 3 of the trunks together as a makeshift table. 4 lanterns swinging from low beams made the room bright. A breeze blew in when Hetmastine opened one of the tall windows above the bed. The consul set plates piled high with sandwiches on the largest trunk and returned again with thick white cups and a coffee therm. He poured while the others ate.
"This is quite good," said Fedmon Cassad. "Where did you get the roast beef?"
"The cold box is fully stocked. There's another large freezer in the aft pantry."
"Electrical?"
asked Hetmastine.
"No, double insulated."
Martin Silenus sniffed a jar, found a knife on the sandwich plate, and added great dollops of horseradish to his sandwich. His eyes sparkled with tears as he ate.
"How long does this crossing generally take?"
Lamia asked the consul. He looked up from his study of the circle of hot black coffee in his cup.
"I'm sorry, what?"
"Crossing the Sea of Grass? How long?"
"A night and a half a day to the mountains, if the winds are with us."
"And then? How long to cross the mountains?" asked Father Hoyt.
"Less than a day."
"If the tramway is running,"
added Cassad. The consul sipped the hot coffee and made a face.
"We have to assume it is. Otherwise..."
"Otherwise what?"
"Otherwise,"
said Colonel Cassad, moving to the open window and putting his hands on his hips,
"we'll be stranded 600 clicks from the Time Tombs and 1,000 from the southern cities."
The consul shook his head.
"No. The temple priests, or whoever are behind this pilgrimage, have seen to it that we've gotten this far. They'll make sure we go all the way."
Braun Lamia crossed her arms and frowned.
"As what? Sacrifices?"
Martin Silenus whooped a laugh and brought out his bottle.
"Who are these coming to the sacrifice? To what green altar, O mysterious priest, leadst thou that heifer, lowing at the skies and all her silken flanks with garlands dressed? What little town by river or seashore, or mountain built with peaceful citadel, is emptied of its folk this pious morn? And, little town, thy streets for evermore will silent be, and not a soul to tell why thou art desolate can e'er return."
Braun Lamia reached under her tunic and brought out a cutting laser no larger than her little finger. She aimed it at the poet's head.
"You miserable little shit! One more word out of you and I swear I'll slag you where you stand!"
The silence was suddenly absolute except for the background rumble groan of the ship. The consul moved toward Martin Silenus. Colonel Cassad took 2 steps behind Lamia. The poet took a long drink and smiled at the dark-haired woman. His lips were moist.
"Oh, build your ship of death. Oh, build it."
Lamia's fingers were white on the pencil laser. The consul edged closer to Silenus, not knowing what to do, imagining the whipping beam of light fusing his own eyes. Cassad leaned toward Lamia like 2 meters of tense shadow.
"Madam,"
said Saul Weintraub from where he sat on the bunk against the far wall,
"need I remind you that there is a child present?"
Lamia glanced to her right. Weintraub had removed a deep drawer from a ship's cupboard and had set it on the bed as a cradle. He had bathed the infant and come in silently just before the poet's recitation. Now he set the baby softly in the padded nest.
"I'm sorry,"
said Braun Lamia and lowered the small laser.
"It's just that he makes me so angry."
Weintraub nodded, rocking the drawer slightly. The gentle roll of the wind wagon, combined with the incessant rumble of the great wheel, appeared to have already put the child to sleep.
"We're all tired and tense. Perhaps we should find our lodgings for the night and turn in."
The woman sighed and tucked the weapon in her belt.
"I won't sleep. Things are too strange."
Others nodded. Martin Silenus was sitting on the broad ledge below the stern windows. Now he pulled up his legs, took a drink, and said to Weintraub,
"Tell your story, old man."
"Yes," said Father Hoyt. The priest looked exhausted to the point of being cadaverous, but his feverish eyes burned. "Tell us. We need to have the stories told and time to think about them before we arrive." Weintraub passed a hand across his bald scalp.
"It's a dull tale. I've never been to Hyperion before. There are no confrontations with monsters, no acts of heroism. It's a tale by a man whose idea of epic adventure is speaking to a class without his notes."
"All the better,"
said Martin Silenus.
"We need a soporific."
Saul Weintraub sighed, adjusted his glasses, and nodded. There were a few streaks of dark in his beard, but most of it had gone gray. He turned the lantern low over the baby's bed and moved to a chair in the center of the room. The consul turned down the other lamps and poured more coffee for those who wanted it. Saul Weintraub's voice was slow, careful in phrase, and precise in wording. And before long, the gentle cadence of his story blended with the soft rumble and slow pitchings of the wind wagon's progress north.